another episode of Whatcha Doin' Podcast. My name is Matt, and I'm currently coming to you with a cat in my lap, because sometimes that's just what happens. Today, I'm very excited to talk with Neon Rot about his upcoming game, Rusty Revolvers. I was actually looking for a way to talk to Neon Rot about his previous Kickstarter game, Fukusatsu, which is a weird Balatro-styled card game, when he messaged me on Blue Sky asking to be on the show to talk about Rusty Revolvers. As I'm recording this, Pocketopia just launched today. It is a big collection of a lot of different tabletop projects. And in the backer kit fashion, they have some crossover content if you back multiples or if you back a specific combination of games. There are a lot of really cool games up for crowdfunding. There will be a link to the landing page in the description. Obviously, I highly recommend everyone go check them out. See what catches your interest, see what the connected games are, and back any that strike your fancy. But enough about that, let's get to the interview.
Testing.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Fantastic.
Okay, hang on. Hello.
There we go. Hello. Check the volume there. Yeah, okay. That's good. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. Yourself?
I'm doing okay. A little... It's been a busy week. There's been a lot of things happening this week.
Yeah.
In the way that happens sometimes.
It's
all good stuff, you know. It's just like, you know, I would have liked if one or two of these things was next week. Just...
Yeah.
When there weren't as many things. But it's all good. Like, it's all, you know, like, you know, this interview, I had an interview on Monday. I have all my regular, you know, stream stuff every day. Today was Pokemon Day, so I had a big stream with some friends, and that was exciting. And then we got a big thing this weekend, so it's just, it's all good stuff. It's just like, you know what would be nice is just like one day, there wasn't anything, you know. It's fine. It's how it works sometimes.
Mm.
But how are you doing? I think you said when we were chatting, you're traveling?
Yes. On Sunday, I'm off to Japan.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
Now is probably the time to go.
Yeah.
The yen is still weak.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, it's not good for them, and you know, it's not like a great thing overall. But you know.
Hey, they seem that like they're doing okay. And
well, I think the yen is weak because the government is pushing really hard to get tourism money.
Mm.
So I think they're, I don't want to say it's like a finger on the scale situation, but it does seem wild that it's like, yeah, we need to get a lot of tourism. Also, the yen is really weak right now. And it's like, all right, well, hey.
I think it's been, I think they've been in deflation for like 10 plus years or something. Mm. And they've only just been inflating.
I think it was okay. Well, it's hard to say if it was okay before COVID because not as many people were worried about it before COVID. But coming out of COVID, it was definitely like, we need money. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of What You Doin' Podcast. I'm Matt. I'm here with Neon Rot today talking about Rusty Revolver. Say hello.
Hello.
It was very excited, actually, to get a DM from you because I'm very excited about your current Kickstarter, which is not what we're here to talk about. But I'm very excited about that. And just thinking through, like, okay, how do I reach out to a person that I have no connection to? Because a lot of the people that have been on the show already are somebody that I have a connection to, either I know already or I know, you know, someone who knows. And I was like, how do I, I got to figure this out. And you just messaged me. You were just like, hey, what do I got to do to be on the show? And I was like, oh, well, okay, then I guess we've solved how to do that. But go ahead, give us a little intro, a little rundown on Rusty Revolvers here at the top for people who might not be familiar.
Sure. Okay.
And then we'll dive in.
So, I'm a tabletop creator, and in March, I'm trying to create my first ever sort of physical card game, as in like inbox buy as a card game. It's called Rusty Revolvers, and it's inspired by Buckshot Roulette, and it uses my style, which is like very much kind of very out there in your face, like Suda 51, punk Japanese, weird colors, all of this stuff. And I always take a concept and just go really weird with it. So The concept of Rusty Revolvers is it's a Russian roulette card game, but you can also inject your opponents with horrible infections and mutations to make playing Russian roulette very hard for them. Or inject yourself and make playing very easier for you.
I mean, you know, or make it harder. If that's what you want to, you know, that's the time you want to have.
Yeah. So there's stuff like hand holes, as in like holes in your hands. So you go to fire and the bullets fall through your hand. Acid blood that kind of, if you get shot, sprays out at your opponent. Stuff like that.
Yeah. I was looking at the little bit of preview stuff you have on the backer kit page. I really enjoy card games. I just really take to the ways like I love TTRPGs, but I just always have enjoyed the mechanics of card games, the sort of regimented like actions of play, and the ways that a lot of games immediately break those and twist those and turn them on their head, and that's part of the fun. And so this game, you know, even just from this little preview, does a lot of that. Like you said, you know, hand holes where you're like, okay, I got to do it. Psych. No, it's fine. Goes right through. And then you have on the preview, eye pustules, bulbous eyes erupt from your hands. You can look at the top card of the chamber before firing, which I love. Just as a mechanic. I love any time you get to peek at things, and, you know, control of information in card games is so important. At the top, what inspired you to make this game? Or I guess what drew you to card games? Because you know you have the Kickstarter on right now for a card game that, like you said, is not a buy a box, here's a card game with cards. So just kind of tell us about the journey that brought you here to Rusty Revolvers.
So I'm a Magic addict. Hi, sure, my name is Will, and I'm addicted to Magic the Gathering. I love card games, you know. I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Back in the day. I only got into Magic in the last sort of 5 or so years. I love a good card game out of the box. There's one I play quite a lot called Let's Summon Demons, which has these wonderful round cards, which partly inspired Rusty Revolvers, because I love non-Euclidean card shapes.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Rusty Revolvers, the sort of bubonic cards, the infection cards, are going to be regular card shape, and then the revolver cards, the chamber, are going to have a round sort of revolver symbol on the back, and then you flip it over, and then there's either a live round or a blank round, and they're a big round card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love this is going to sound really odd, but I love breaking card games. So...
No, I get it. I get exactly what you mean.
So I love when the creators of the card game give you rules on how to play the card game, and then you work out a way to break those rules in the constrictions of their rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm very much inspired by Magic the Gathering, because obviously in Magic you can create a computer through their card effects.
Yeah, and then that's... you know, like I said, that's what I enjoy a lot, is just like, okay, here are the rules. We've got this step, and then, you know, like for Magic, like, okay, here's my main step, and then we attack, and then we resolve, and then I have another main if I want it, and then we pass. And it's like, okay, but what if I attacked in my first main? What if we had instance that I could just play whenever I wanted and it didn't matter? What if I could attack out of sequence? What if I made you attack me? What if, you know, and that's I think really the juice of it. And I love games that use cards, because to me, like, a card is such an interesting way to engage with rules, because a lot of the times it's just, I, you know, you do a thing and it resolves, you know, and either you're changing the rules right now, you might be changing the rules going forward. I spent a lot of time very recently, I bought a bunch of the .hack TCG, and then sat down and learned how to play that. And that does some weird stuff where you only play one card a turn. And so a lot of what you're doing in that game is figuring out how to make the most out of that one card and how to set yourself up for cards, turns where you can play a lot of cards. And there's just something so exciting about just a little slip of paper. You know, everybody loves, like, even just like, you know, regular, like, poker or whatever. Everybody loves that moment of like having the exact thing that you need and just like bam, you know, and getting it over on your opponent, whether that's, you know, another person playing cards or something like Slay the Spire or whatever. I think a lot of why roguelike deck builders are as popular as they are is that card format is so immediately understandable, and like there's so much visual language that's immediately accessible.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of the thing that I love about that is the combinations as well. So I was trying to think, like, okay, if the wording is exact, this card can be combined with any other card, or this card could be combined with any other card. So I always bear that in mind whenever I write effects for things in my games, like Rusty Revolvers, like Fukuzatsu, which is what is funding right now, or won't be funding when this comes out. But I love a good roguelike. So, like, if you take something like The Binding of Isaac, the video game, not the card game, any one of those power-ups that you pick up, those static abilities, could just be a card, and the card could say this, but then when you combine it with this card, or this static ability, and then suddenly your little Isaac character is throwing, like, angel wings all over the screen, and then your game crashes. But that doesn't happen when there's a card game, because the game keeps going.
If you manage to crash the game while playing a card game, I don't know. I'm nervous.
So, obviously, something funding right now, Fukuzatsu, there's a mode in it that is very much inspired by The Binding of Isaac, but it's poker. And you're descending into a haunted house, and you're fighting waves and waves of enemies until you fight a big boss. Mm-hmm. But each of those enemies is a tarot card, and in Fukuzatsu, tarot cards are items. So every time you beat an enemy, you can take that tarot card and put it in front of you. And I was getting people to test it and giving all these tarot cards abilities. And someone went, hey, if I combine these three tarot cards, my deck became all tens and they all had plus 1,000. And I went, cool, that's a feature, not a bug. Keep going.
Great. Great job. Great build.
Yeah.
Crushed it. Yeah, I'm very much the person in you know, roguelikes and deck builders especially, where it's just like, okay, so this says if I summon a dinosaur, then they get +5 health. And then this says every time an enemy, a monster gains health, I gain that much life. And this says every time I gain life, I deal that much damage to my opponent. So every time I play a dinosaur, I gain 5 life and deal 5 damage to my opponent. Sick.
Mm.
And then you just win. You just keep going. So this leads, we've talked about it, but this leads great into a question that I had written down about balance. Because I think a card game is very obviously, hey, here's the thing you might not know. A card game is different from a TTRPG. A thing that I think is interesting about card games versus TTRPGs is card games are static in what they are. You know, like you get a card, it is what it is. You can't really have a discussion about it in a way that you can in a TTRPG. You know, you can be like, hey, like that ability seems a little strong. Maybe we have a talk about it. Or, oh, actually, hey, I don't know if that works the way that you think it works. Let's have a discussion about it. And it feels a little more malleable. Card game is like, I play this guy. I tap him for his ability. That's what it does. That's what it is. And, you know, I feel like coming out of the conversation we just had, and you know, my own feelings is I'm less concerned about balance and more concerned about feel of a game. And I feel like I know where you fall on that, but what's kind of your thoughts around balancing your game as you're sort of working through designing?
Oh, vibes first. So So the way I test games is I just release them and then update them as they play. So generally with the sort of Kickstarter games, I'll release the game ahead of time on itch.io, or I have a Discord. I will release it secretly to the Discord and go, hey guys, I made a fun card game. I won't tell them they're testing it. I'll just say it's done. Play it. And they'll come back and go, how does this work? And they're my playtesters. Essentially. But I kind of vaguely try and balance things in my head, but again, the urge to just make everything overpowered and then watch a bunch of gods fight is just immensely strong.
Yeah, and to your point about playtesting, I mean, I think that's a great like methodology for it, is to say, hey, look, I made a thing. Let's see how it goes. Especially for something that doesn't exist in a hard physical format, you know, something that can be easily updated, easily changed, easily said. Instead of 3, it's 2. Try two, and we'll see how it goes. So I love that idea. I love we've been talking a lot. I've been talking to a lot of people doing Zine Quest stuff, and a thing that's come up a lot is just like, get your game out there, get it done. You can iterate, you can change, you can make a new one, you can do a million different things, but you can't do that until you get it done. And so I really like the idea of like, I made a game, try it, see how it goes. And then coming back and, you know, discussing in terms of balance of just like, what feels wrong? You know, because I think there's a lot of times with when you try to balance things, and it's my criticism against some, more crunchy TTRPGs specifically, is they will tend to balance in a way that no one feels like strong. You know, it's like everybody just feels kind of meh, but we all feel meh. And is that balance? So I like the idea of just like, yeah, listen, is it like you said before? Oh, your decks are tens and it's +1,000. Cool. Good job. You found good combo. You got just the right order. And so I think that's a lot of what balance is like, what feels wrong? What feels off? What feels like this is not. This is the rules rubbing together in a weird way, and not, oh, hell yeah, every single one of my cards is a uber angel that just kicks everything's ass. Great. Just keep going. That's why people love Balatro, I think. Like, that's why I think that is a huge, like, Balatro is a huge conversation with it around balance. And like, maybe balance is overrated in a lot of ways. Maybe you should just let some stuff be strong and have a good time with it.
Yeah. And obviously, my other game, Fukuzatsu, is based on Balatro. And a big thing about Balatro is that you don't have a calculator, so you cannot see what score you're going to create. Obviously, when you're playing a physical game, you can see what score you're going to create because you're sitting there and you have the time to work it out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're playing Fukuzatsu, you don't have the time to work it out because you've got three other players who are all going, come on, we want to go. Just take your turn.
Well, hang on. I got to figure, is this 200? Shut up. Play the card. Come on. Nobody else did this. Come on.
Mm.
I like that. Yeah. I'm excited. I said at the top, I'm excited for Fukuzatsu for exactly that reason. Like, it has the same chaotic energy of Balatro where, like, I think in one of the preview images on the Kickstarter, there's like a Charles Barkley card of just like, yeah, that's in there. Just, you know, don't worry about it. I love the idea. As a person who loves card games, I have a lot of cards in my house. And I like the idea of being like, okay, we're playing with this poker deck. Oh, here's, this is a card. This is an improvement from Imperial Settlers. And then this is a Charizard card. And this is a Great Axe +1 from Pathfinder Adventure card game. And this is, Black Lotus. So let's go.
So the Charles Barkley card is so there's an extra bit in Fukuzatsu where you can use the Konbini with a C, and Konbini lets you introduce cards from any game or anything, any card from anything. It was a NBA Hoops Mark Jackson Knicks card.
That's it.
So specifically the 1991 NBA Hoops Mark Jackson Knicks card number 205. And that's actually a terrible card to use in the Konbini because there's no text on it. It's just a picture of Mark Jackson. And the reason I picked it is because it's got two serial killers in the background. it's the Menendez brothers card where they went to a basketball game and
wild. Yeah. What a pull.
It's post them killing their parents and using the money to go to a basketball game, and then they happen to get on a trading card. I just thought it would be a little funny deep cut to put on the Kickstarter page.
I love weird stuff like that. Stuff that nobody catches at the time, and then like it's just like, oh wait, hang on. Actually, hang on. That's nutty. Like, I didn't know.
So
that.
The game is called Fukuzatsu or Torred Poker, and a lot of I haven't seen anyone except for this one random Japanese review site mentioned that Torred is an actual thing. So Torred is a internet legend stemming from a real event where a guy went through a Japanese customs, and he had a passport that looked legitimate from the country of Torred, which isn't a real country. And he was a con man trying to see how far he could get across the world with a fake passport from a country that doesn't exist.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It does exist. I've never heard of this before.
Because that's came from there.
you have to step into the meta lore of Fukuzatsu and then.
Yeah, I mean, so there's an extra mode called Iron Man mode, and Iron Man mode is there was a Reddit post about the Magic Iron Man tournaments where people would rip up any card that got put into the grave. And that's apparently why there are so many less Black Lotuses, because it was very common to just play the Black Lotus, rip it up, and get the mana for it. And in Iron Man mode, you rip up every card you discard.
I love this idea. I don't know if I would play it with any cards that I really like, but I do really like the idea of like going to like the Dollar Tree and buying those like five pack of playing cards and then just getting weird with it.
Oh yeah. You're meant to use the cards that you don't care about, but then you start to care about them because you start using them and you start, you know, modifying them, and people start stealing them, and you start stealing ones from other players. I think there's a mode called Attackerat, where you play basically Magic. You're attacking with your poker cards. But one of the rules in Attackerat is you have to name a card when you modify it by writing its name onto the card.
I play Timothy for 5.
And then someone takes Timothy and they rip him in half.
Timothy, no! Then you just rip a little part off, and then it's I play Timothy for 4. But that's Fukutatsu, which will be funded by the time you hear this.
Yes.
But I think it's always interesting to have a conversation around like the last thing someone designed, because I feel like there's always a lot of the current thing and the last thing, you know, there's always a the conversation of through.
Mm.
So what was it about the idea stemming off of that? What was the sort of the thing with Rusty Revolvers where you were like, I want a game that's static. I want a game that's like, here are the cards. Here's what you do.
I really like the idea of Buckshot Roulette, the video game. But I feel like there are so little power-ups in it.
Mm.
And there isn't really a modding scene around it. And I don't know how to mod. So I made a card game instead.
No, I love that, actually. That's great. That's the best reason.
Mm. I wanted Buckshot Roulette with a lot more interesting, or a lot more abilities, and a physical card game that you can play, that you can point at someone in the same room with the revolver and they go no.
No, that's great, because that's always, I mean, that's the feeling I have a lot with these sorts of games too, where, you know, you're doing a thing, and then how do you modify it, how do you adjust it, whatever. Is I always love, like, I've been playing a lot of Balatro, but I've been playing the Pokemon mod, which, one, I checked it out because I was like, oh, let me see the Pokemon mod. But then I really love all of the mechanics and stuff they introduce in the Pokemon mod. They introduce leveling jokers, they introduce evolving jokers, they introduce new items, they introduce, like, new card interactions. And I'm like, you know, obviously it's cool that I can have a joker that's a Magikarp, but the Magikarp joker is also inherently the Splash joker. So it's like, okay, now there's a lot of those jokers that talk about having played or having scored evens. I can score a lot more evens when I can score all five cards. Hang on now. What are we working with? What do we got? And that's the feeling that I think people love about card games, is that moment where you see two or three cards next to each other and you go, oh, wait a minute. What do we got going? What are we working with here?
Yeah. Yeah, I've always said that the best symbol in all of Magic is the untap symbol, because every time I see the untap symbol, I go, I could untap and then use another ability. I can combine that with anything, and suddenly I have a combo.
That, yeah, it is nasty when it says untap this, and you're like, hang on now. Untap, we're cooking.
Mm.
I love it. So from a visual inspiration standpoint, you know, you've mentioned Buckshot Roulette, which I've yet to play. I really need to sit down. I played through Inscription last year, which, you know, I was surprised it took me that long as a card game sicko, as I describe myself often. I'm surprised it took me as long as it did to get to Inscription. But Buckshot Roulette is on the short list. So from an artistic standpoint, what was kind of your artistic inspirations and your kind of design ideas?
So I take a lot of inspiration from Suda51 and Grasshopper Manufacture visuals, and a lot of inspiration from just like old magazines and kind of I really like those old game adverts from the early 2000s that they'd put in magazines. The sort of like Crash Bandicoot peeing next to someone at a urinal, there's a multitude of really strange Pokemon ones, or I think there's one where, like, I think Spyro's in a hospital bed because Rayman is replacing Spyro, and it's a Rayman advert or something like that.
I can see that. Yeah. I remember that Crash Bandicoot ad.
Mm.
So I could definitely see like character in a hospital bed because they got kicked out or something. I believe that.
And I'd love the bizarre kind of Wild West visuals of all of these, like, these strange magazine ads, and some of them don't even follow like graphic design rules. They're just like, yeah, just slap everything on the page. So obviously again, sorry, going back to Fukuzatsu, when I designed all the pages in Fukuzatsu, it was literally, oh, what do I feel like doing today in Photoshop? And then I just open my massive folder of royalty-free stuff and drag this into Photoshop and drag that into Photoshop and stretch that and invert the colors on that and go, oh, I don't really like that, and get rid of that and then drag that into Photoshop. And so I've come from that, and I want to make that into a kind of more coherent card game, but looks like that. Yeah, I like when colors are hurt your eyes, but also they're pleasing to look at.
Yeah, and I would definitely say that has been achieved. Again, looking at the preview stuff here,
I've just sent you via Bly the full preview of the Rusty Revolvers campaign. I don't know if it's too late for you to look at that, but
oh, the whole thing. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is great. This brings up a thing I wanted to ask. Let me bring the landing page back, just because that has the text a little more accessible. Sure. So this mentions all in search of precious teeth. So as I mentioned, like I played Inscription like just in October.
Yeah.
So in search of teeth, I have an immediate vibe.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and, definitely inspired by Inscription there.
I think the first act of Inscription does a lot of the card game stuff that I really enjoy, like weird rule breaking, weird combos, weird stuff that isn't like completely off the wall, you know, like impossible Omega Brain stuff, but it's like it's thinking through the way everything works and then putting those layers together and then trying desperately in the roguelike fashion to piece that, like, okay, so I can make all of my deer fly. Can I get any deer?
Yeah.
And then like, oh no, nope, this one was bad. I feel like I spent so long in that first act just trying to get everything to line up.
I mean the moment when you see the untapped symbol in that first act is when you get the squirrel head totem.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, that thing that I have in every deck in every run, I can make all of them go back to my hand when I sacrifice them, and suddenly I'm cooking.
Mm-hmm. Or when you have the you get the unsacrificable cat, the eternal cat, and then you're like, oh, I'm just gonna put that symbol on this guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So walk us through kind of like the standard round of play. So we get kind of an idea of how it would go.
So in Rusty Revolvers, you have your round deck in the middle, which is your round cards. They are physically round cards, and they are bullet rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Your chamber deck. And you have a shared deck of bubonic cards, and you draw from the shared deck of bubonic cards. So you have like five in your hand, and then on your turn, you can play a bubonic card either on yourself or your opponent, and you infect them with the bubonic cards. So on the back of the bubonic cards, there is a syringe on each one. So the implication is you're physically kind of sticking a syringe in them. Or yourself. And then once you've inflicted them or yourself with some sort of bubonic disease, you then have to take the aimer card. So it's a little finger on a card, a little pointy finger, and you have to physically aim it at any player, that includes yourself, and then you flip the top card of the chamber deck. And on the other side, there will either be a blank or a live round. So live rounds are red, and they'll have a little holographic red ring on the card. So it looks proper, you know, you flip it over and you go, bam, and there's a live round. Or it'll have a blue ring, and that's a blank round. And so if it's a blank round and you're aiming at yourself, you get another go. You get to play another bubonic card. You get to flip another card off of the chamber. Mm-hmm. If it's a live round and you're pointing at yourself, you lose a tooth. and you have 3 teeth. And if you lose all those teeth, you're out of the game. If you're pointing at an opponent and you flip it over and it's a live round, you hit them, you take one of their teeth and add it to your teeth. If you have a blank round and you're aiming at them, you've missed and they get the upper hand and it's their go.
So I'm immediately noticing that if you shoot yourself and hit, you lose a tooth and it just goes out. But if you shoot someone else, you take their teeth.
Yes.
Which is an interesting back and forth of, you know, and I imagine there are cards that tie into any of those interactions. That change them and tweak them and add them and what have you. And so I'm immediately intrigued by the interaction spaces. And you know, you mentioned like acid blood, like if I get hit, it sprays onto other people. Like, okay, well, am I willing to sacrifice one tooth? Am I in a strong position where I can sacrifice one tooth and hit the guy next to me and he only has one? And so that gets him out and I take that one. And maybe that hits him and I take that one. So I'm trading 2 for 1. So I'm one up.
So yeah, there's cards that interact with any of those interactions. Life can be lost out of the game. So as in a tooth is removed from the game, there's now one less tooth to go around. But it means that now you want to steal a teeth from someone else desperately, because and you can have more than 3 teeth. If you steal a tooth from someone, you could have 4 teeth and they've got 2 teeth. Or 5 teeth and they've got 1 tooth. But the more teeth you have, the more of the target you become.
Sure.
Unless the other person is thinking, okay, if I take that guy out of the game, he's only got 1 tooth. If I take him out of the game, that's one less person to shoot me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's a classic, like, versus thing in any sort of lineup. Like, okay, you've got the player who's obviously very strong, very built up, and then two players who aren't as strong, and it's like, well, I could attack him. We could gang up and try to take him out. Maybe I take you out now, and I try my chances.
The other thing I didn't explain as well is how the chamber deck works. So the chamber deck is made up of a large amount of blank rounds and 1 live round, or 2 live round, or 3 live rounds. So when you first start playing, you take 4 blank rounds and 1 live round, and you shuffle the chamber deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that gets to the bottom, you take 5 blank rounds and 2 live rounds, and you shuffle the chamber deck.
Mm-hmm.
And once that gets to the bottom, you take 6 blank rounds and 3 live rounds, and you shuffle the chamber deck. So it adds more and more bullets to the deck.
That's great. And having, I was curious, I was going to ask later on if there was how the chamber deck was set up, because again, my card brain immediately goes like, okay, so I know there's X number of cards. I know there's X number of live rounds. I know we've gone through X amount of the deck. There's X, you know, and then so it just becomes like, okay, there's 3 cards left. I know there's 1 round in there. Am I willing to risk that this is the one that I shoot myself to activate my acid blood to try to do? Do I try to take someone else?
And a lot of these mechanics come from Buckshot Roulette. So the increasing of the amount, the kind of aiming at yourself or aiming at an opponent. What it doesn't have is it doesn't have abilities that permanently remove a round from the deck. So you could have a flesh pocket in your hand and you store a bullet in that flesh pocket without looking at it. And then when you go to take your shot, you can then take that bullet out and put it on top of the chamber before you take your shot.
But that
carries on over between rounds.
But see, so you say flesh pocket without looking at it, but I know there's a card that lets you look at it. So if I have, that's the thing we've talked about. If I have that combo, I have an incredible amount of control, but getting that combo.
Exactly.
Can you get it? This is, hey, listen, I'm glad I was already going to back this because I'm excited. I'm going to back this. The hardest part of doing the show has not been immediately just giving a bunch of money to people for stuff. Oh man. No, this sounds great. I'm excited. So, what This is an interesting question, because I think people are gonna react to this differently. And I asked somebody it, and you know, they had a great answer. And this is kind of the next one that it feels right to ask. This feels like a lead up. This feels like I'm asking a huge question. What's next for like Rusty Revolvers? What's next for you? Like, do you have another game ready to go? Do you have Rusty Revolvers? You know, more Rust, more Revolve, like, you know, V2, you know, temp, like, you know, in the back pocket. So
I have a wide range of games that I'm constantly working on expansions for. So I'm mostly a tabletop RPG creator. So I have a game called Chira Gaiden. It's a Junji Ito inspired tabletop game. I'm constantly working on stuff for that. I was writing something for it right like just now before we started this call. I have a sort of splatterpunk trauma inspired mutant game called Below Dwelling Sewer Mutants, or BDSM for short. I'm constantly working on expansions for that. So I'm currently working on an expansion for that called it's a fishing expansion. I can't remember the name right now. I think it's called like no, it'll come to me. Come to me. I've
it's
got
the fishing one. Whatever. Don't worry about it.
I've got a Lollipop Chainsaw inspired tabletop RPG that's been in the works for quite some time. The rules are written. I just need to write the kind of fine details. I need to lay it out. It's inspired by Lollipop Chainsaw, High School of the Dead, and Panty and Stocking. Just these like very self-aware sexual anime things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also I've worked out how to introduce Devil May Cry juggling into a tabletop RPG for it. So
as long as it works.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always working on quite a lot of stuff. I mean, this is my full-time job, so if I don't output a Kickstarter every now and again, mm-hmm. I don't have money. So I want to put these games out into the world. I want more and more of these games out. You know, I want people playing them. So I just, you know, and I'm going to Japan in 3 days. I think it is. I've got Japanese translations of my game Chira Gaiden. I'm going to bring them with me and just kind of give them to someone at a zine shop or something. Just, hey, you want this for a game? Yeah.
Just hide it somewhere.
Yeah, just hide it in a cereal box or something.
Yeah, just you know, put a little card in it, and just there you go. I would have a hard time not hiding it in a bookstore or something like that. Mm. But in a way, but I would immediately also be like, well, somebody would cause a problem. Someone would get mad if they found it in like a bookstore. You know, I feel like that's why people hide it like behind plants and stuff, because I feel like once you put it in a bookstore, someone's gonna call you and be like, hey, what are you doing?
Or you find a book, you know, you find a tabletop RPG, and you put it in the pages, between the pages.
That's for you. That's extra. If you bought this one, that's, hey.
Yeah.
Enjoy that.
Free game.
It was the weirdest thing. I went to the store, and I bought this copy of the Fallout TTRPG. And then inside is this weird card game. And I don't think it's related. It's just in there. I don't know.
Does everyone get this in their copy?
Yeah, does everybody? Did you get just a Reddit thread?
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys? Does anyone else get this weird card game? Is this a bonus? That's funny.
So I didn't really mention it when you brought up art, but a lot of the way I create art. So art for me is the process, not the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a shame, because a lot of people don't see the process, they see the finished product. So the way I create art is art. I use a Game Boy camera quite a lot of the time. Where is my Game Boy camera? Somewhere here. I take, so I either draw or I arrange the ARP in Photoshop. Take a photo of the screen with the Game Boy camera. I have a flash drive to upload my save back to my computer and then open it in an emulator. Mm-hmm. And then I screenshot the preview so I can regrade the colors in Photoshop. And that's how I get a lot of the art. So all of the art on all the cards in Rusty Revolvers is Game Boy art. It's made using a Game Boy camera. There's quite a lot of things in Fukusatsu Plus where I have a HDMI to VGA cable.
Mm-hmm.
So I display art I've created on a CRTV and then take a photo of the CRTV screen to give it that crunch, give it that extra kind of crisp around it.
That rules.
And yeah.
I
don't know if you've ever seen the show, you might not have, there's a British comedy show called The Mighty Boosh.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's the Mighty Boosh bit of, so yeah, to get the new sound, I ran it for a boot and then I put it for a crab and let it ferment for a few.
But I think that's great. Like you said, like a lot of people don't see the process. And so like, here's the thing, right? A lot of people might say, and they're fools, would say like, couldn't you just like put a Photoshop filter on it and that's it? And it's like, yeah, sure, I could.
Yeah.
But half of the fun of it, like you said, half of the art of it is understanding the process. And I think, not to get all hoity-toity as a person who doesn't like make art, you know, like you know, I don't have a creative endeavor in that way. But like, I feel like so much of the digital art, like the time in digital art that we live in now, is like people think it's easy now. Right? Like people think that because Photoshop exists, you can just go and fart out an art.
Yeah.
And like, sure, you absolutely can, but you know, people who are interested in making stuff creatively and in making stuff in a specific style and voice find different ways to do it, right? Find new ways to do it, find new avenues, you know? Yeah. So like, yeah, okay, I drew this in Photoshop. And then I took a picture of it with a Game Boy camera. And then I love that it's not a Game Boy camera hooked up to your computer. It's a Game Boy camera on a Game Boy that then you load the save in an emulator. And then I take a picture of it. And then I crunch the color out of it. And then I put it, and it's like, that's great.
There it is.
Fun. Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, if you have your own voice in art, it will come out in your art. So, like, even if you do just put a filter on something, you've got to put a specific order of filters on something. You've got to think about, you know, how you move stuff around before you put the filter on it. Like, and a lot of the people who think art is easy go, yeah, an AI can do it. The process is the art. So that isn't art. You're removing the art from it. You're removing the process. And stock photos exist. I mean, Fukusatsu is entirely made of stock photos. And that looks completely unique. And each thing looks specifically Fukusatsu. It's not like, oh yeah, that's that stock photo, that's that stock photo. The fish on the front cover of Fukusatsu is just a doodle fish that somebody I know made. And like, it's all over it. It's like...
Yeah, the conversation of generative AI and stuff has come up in almost every interview, you know, obviously. Okay. I think it's very funny to like talk to people who are creatives, because like, yeah, like of course nobody wants to use generative AI on their stuff, because like you said, part of the process, part of the having the create the finished thing is the creative part of it is sitting down and even just for writing a game is sitting down and writing it in your style, in your words, in your,
exactly,
you know, the way that you decide to lay it out. And I think it's the frustrating part of existing now as even, and like I said, even as a person who doesn't like, is I'm not creative in that way. I'm not out here designing a bunch of games and stuff, but I'm aware and I'm in conversation with creatives and I listen to creative people talk about their process, all of that. And then to just, and to have people who, you know, have always thought that art is easy for any number of reasons. They're just like, yeah, look, I could just do it. Click, click, click. And it's like, no, you fool. You don't, you never learned. You never listened to what they were saying.
Hmm.
You know, like you just, like you said, they just see the end result and they think that's the whole of it.
Even then, it's not like, so I saw one instance of AI being used in what I thought was an okay way, right? Mm-hmm. So there was an artist I came across on Twitter, formerly known as X, who they had lost control of their hands. They couldn't draw. So they trained an AI on their art.
Mm.
And then they used it to create more art pieces based on solely their art.
Mm.
And that was their process. Their process was they actively trained this. So like they had to have had the base thing before they trained the AI.
Right.
So they had to have made all these pieces and that was their process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like even if you go, oh yeah, it's easy. AI can do it. It can do it from what?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Here's your AI that has nothing. Go.
Yeah.
Go.
Exactly.
Make the art. It's so easy. Do it. Yeah. It makes me think of like back when this is long, long, long ago when Roger Ebert was losing his voice.
Mm.
They had someone. I mean, it was probably very, very early machine learning. Then they trained a sound-alike voice. Based on the thousands of hours of, you know, interviews and things that he had done. And I was just like, wow, like that's, I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, that's interesting. That's, you know, and thinking about it now, like, yeah, wow, that's an interesting thing that you could do if you did it in a way that didn't steal art from every single person that's ever existed on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
You know,
and then that Robert Egert voice gave The Happening a 4 out of 5.
God, did he really?
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh, I take it back. I mean, it down. That's a bad one too.
I mean, he's right.
Oh, The Happening. Am I thinking of the wrong movie? When I
the M Night Shyamalan movie about the killer plants. Spoilers.
No, the movie was terrible. The movie was so bad. That's one of the few movies I've ever seen that I was like, I hate this.
It's
oh.
So I listened to somebody talk about it recently, the movie, and that movie came out in 2008, but it sounds like a generative AI script.
I believe that. Yeah, no, I agree.
I saw it in theaters.
I believe that.
Yeah, but it's not because it's from before AI. So it
oh, that's absolutely yes. I've never heard it put that way, but yes. In the way you can only describe it now, because things just happened in a way that didn't have any connection to the thing that happened before.
Yeah, they happened. Oh. You know, they're happening.
Don't stop it. Stop yourself. Okay. Rusty Revolvers.
Yes.
It looks like you have a fun little exclusive card pack that's going to be added. For backers.
Yes.
Well, there's two actually, because there's the limited version of the game that seems to come with some extra things, which I like seeing. I have feelings about like crowdfunded exclusive things when it comes to large projects. But I think for small projects, it's like, hey, listen, we're trying to get people to, you know, spend some extra money to make this product. And so, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
But then so you also have something connected to Sisterhood, a TTRPG of hard-boiled nuns, exorcism, and evil. And I gotta ask questions about that. I gotta know what's going on with that.
I mean, it's self-explanatory, isn't it?
Well, the game, yeah. But what is that? What do these cards do? What are we doing here? What are we adding?
So, I'm very good friends with Charlie and Barney and Adam, all the wonderful guys at Parable Games. So Parable made Shiver. Which is a excellent tabletop RPG.
That's why about running horror movies.
And they're working on a back kit for this event that Rusty Revolvers is going into, which is called Pocketopia. And part of the incentive of running a campaign in Pocketopia is that you should team up with someone that you know who's also running a campaign and provide shared backer incentives, which I think is an excellent idea. It's
oh yeah, this is the thing Backer Kits started doing, which I like. It's a fun idea.
Yeah. So if you back Rusty Revolvers and you back their tabletop RPG about nuns, they've designed these cards for my game, and I've designed a thing for their game.
So messed up. Now I have access to all the previews. Oh, you messed up. You made me too powerful. But yeah, no, I really like the thing that Backer Kit has been doing. A friend of mine ran one of the projects from Mothership Month, which I think was such a fun idea. Like, one, on Backer Kit's side to like do this incentive, like they got to do something different from Kickstarter, right? Like they have to provide, from a business standpoint, they have to provide a way that their platform is more interesting than just doing a Kickstarter. And this is a great way to do it. And then Mothership Month was such a sick idea of, from Tuesday Night Game side of, we have a thing that we're doing and that's cool. But what if we got like a ton of people together and, you know, got everybody's projects some light and, you know, got more people, more eyes on everything.
Yes.
It's such a fun idea.
And I don't know if you've noticed in the campaign exclusive card, so the four horsemen, oh sorry, the four horsemen of the Cardpocalypse.
Perfect.
There's flavor text on every card. That's something I plan on doing on each of the cards in Rusty Revolvers, is putting these little pieces of flavor on the cards, because I love flavor text. That's part of the thing that drew me to Magic the Gathering, is I came from Yu-Gi-Oh, and in Yu-Gi-Oh there is no plot. Whereas in Magic, I can look at this weird little goblin man and go, huh, I wonder who he is. And then at the bottom it says, this weird little goblin man likes to run around and get his feet wet. And I'm like, oh, cool, I know more about that guy.
All right, this guy's weird, but okay. I know what he's into. Do you have plans to do any more sort of tie-in things like that now or in the future?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Now I know about this, because I was introduced to this concept from this project. And Rusty Revolvers is kind of a tester to see how Backer Kit will fare, because I have run quite a few Kickstarters, but I've never run a Backer Kit campaign. So this is the first sort of campaign I'm jumping into. And I thought, why not test, you know, a card game? Because I've never done a card game before. So a great way to test a new thing is to test a new thing at the same time.
Perfect. Try out both things. See how it goes.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, it's cool. I've really been enjoying doing this this podcast, doing the show, chatting with a bunch of people. People are just so excited for the stuff that they're making, and it's great. It's infectious, you know? And it's so amazing, you know, just getting to chat with people like, "Hey, I made this cool thing." Like, "Yeah, tell me about your cool thing, man." It's cool. Yeah. Tell me about it. It's why I'm surprised, like, Kickstarter, like, the little videos are as short as they are, because I think if I made a Kickstarter, that Kickstarter video would be like an hour.
I wanted to do one for Fukuzatsu, but I ran out of time completely. I wanted to do a full, like, you know, overhead shot, people playing Fukuzatsu, everyone's dressed as clowns, they're just like...
Sure, yeah.
But I ran out of time. Maybe at some point I'll do another Fukuzatsu Kickstarter for some sort of extra expansion. And
yeah, that's my favorite card game thing, is the expansion to the expansion.
Yes.
You have to have this first expansion to then have this expansion.
I don't know if you've noticed some of the writing on the Fukuzatsu campaign, but I just got to go weird with it.
I will be honest. I saw it and was like, well, I'm back in that. And I just did not read very much of it, if I'm completely honest, because I saw the idea and was just like, oh yeah, sold.
So I have a little preview for the tarot cards that come with the big box. And in the little description underneath, it says the devil, the emperor, the fool, the world, and not pictured, the queen. That's you, the girl reading this.
Oh, wait, hang on. I have a lot of questions about the way things work now.
Tears, I put a little description for each image, so it was Fuku, Zatsu, the Japanese text for Fukuzatsu Plus.
Mm.
And because no one ever reads it, if you go all the way down to the bottom of the page, in the risks and challenges, I have all parts of the book are already written and laid out. The only risk currently is if the world ends, brackets not tempting it.
And yeah, technically a risk.
Yeah, technically is. Long-lasting design. The hardcover is designed to last an atomic blast, coated in chaos-grade paint that causes the tomb to slip into another dimension where it did not take such damage. But that does come with the added accidental feature of if you bend a page, you'll lose your copy. Reusability and recyclability. The book, box, and cards are made entirely from recyclable paper that can be used and reread as many times as you have eyes or a scribe.
Oh no, you can only read it twice, damn. Just to keep hiring new people to read the book to me, because I forgot a rule. It's like, get on TaskRabbit.
Oh, and on the subject of terrible magazine ads, the very last image on the campaign page is a magazine ad I made for Fukuzatsu.
Oh yeah, this is great. You can't play God just to win a card game. No, watch me.
That's an actual quote from someone that tested it.
That's great. Yeah.
Oh, and so I don't know if you've noticed, but my logo is in the bottom left of that ad, Neon Rot, and there's another logo in the bottom right called Dreamfish Games. Dreamfish Games doesn't exist. I made it up because it didn't look right only having one logo in the corner.
Yeah, there's always... Yeah, no, because you're right, because in that... On those old ads, there would be like three or four logos.
Yeah.
Because it'd be like, oh yeah, here's this company that worked on it, here's this other company that worked on it, here's the company that's publishing it. You know, here's someone else just for the hell of it. Here's the Sony logo.
Yeah. My funded badge is funded in 5 hours and 27 minutes, give or take. And it's a little homemade badge rather than the official Kickstarter one they hand out.
You gotta have fun. You know, you gotta have fun with things.
Yeah. If you've got ADHD, don't read the naming conventions for the updates.
Did these spell things out?
No. I've just not used a naming convention for the updates.
I see what we're doing.
For the last two, so that it being not having a naming convention isn't a naming convention because the last two are the same.
Right, everyone before this has been different, ergo this must be the same in order to continue the trend of everything being different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, if this hasn't sold you on Rusty Revolvers, I don't think anything will. I think everything up until now has been solid. Amazing. All right. So, thank you so much for spending time and chatting. Before we get to the end, I always like to take a moment to thank the guests before I forget, because there's been a lot of times where like I've been listening back and I'm like, I completely forgot to do this thing, and it's like the basic thing that I do every time, and how did I forget? So, I always make a point to do that.
Thank you for having me on. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. No, always. It has been, as I've said, it has been amazing. I say this literally every time because every time it continues to be true. It has been amazing the amount of people who are like, hell yeah, I'll be on the show. I want to be on the show. I want to talk about my thing. And I'm like, what do you mean? You want to be on the show? My show? My show? Do you know who I... Do you think I'm someone else? Do you think...
Yeah, okay, let's flip this around. Introduce yourself. Who are you?
No. I did this. I did this episode already. There's an episode in the feed. I did this already. Joke's on you. I tricked you. Fell into my trap card if I did that already. the last question I always ask, actually, is there anything else I want to ask before I shoot myself in the foot here? I really like I like that your game is inspired by your game. I like that you're like, you know what inspired my game? The other game I wrote. That really inspired it.
Yeah, not to you know, blow my own horn, but I've really inspired myself.
I think that makes sense. Like, I really do. I mentioned this at the top. Like, I really do think a lot of people who are, I almost said habitual designers, and that feels like I'm like It feels like I'm calling you something. But like people, you know, people who design multiple games, multiple things, multiple projects, I do always feel like there's a through line on the last thing to the new thing. Like there's some idea that they didn't get to explore or something they didn't feel they had enough time to add in to that thing that they're like, okay, well, you know, I was just talking to Banana Chan and I was like, I feel like so many people's games when they design a TTRPG, they'll be in the middle of designing a game. They'll have an idea that they know doesn't fit in this game and they'll go and they'll just write a whole other game. And then it's like, okay, cool. I've got that idea out of my brain. And then now I can focus on this.
I never understood why if M. Night Shyamalan makes The Happening, right, and it's not well received and people hate it, why doesn't he just make it again? Why is it not acceptable for directors to go, okay, I'm going to make The Happening. It's my movie. I have the copyright to that name. I'm just going to make The Happening. And then people will enjoy it this time because I've reworked the script. Like, why don't people just do that? Just make the same thing again.
See, I think it would be funnier if you were like Christopher Nolan and you were like, I'm going to make The Happening. he messed that up. I could do it better.
Yeah, or right. So yeah, no, M. Night Shyamalan, he's produced The Happening. It flopped in cinemas. People hated it. He goes, well, you know, this didn't really work. But what if Guillermo del Toro made it? So he just gives Guillermo del Toro the script and Guillermo del Toro makes it. And then they just, people call it the Guillermo del Toro Happening, and then it's a good film.
The Guillermo-ning. This is an idea. Listen, you might be joking. This is an idea. They could do this.
I'm not joking. People should just remake movies straight away when they flop.
Especially the people like M. Night Shyamalan who like could do it. You know?
Yeah.
They could be like, actually, hang on, let me try that again.
Yeah.
You know? What they should do is like what they do with anime, where they're like, okay, actually we're going to like reanimate a bunch of this before we put out the Blu-ray. He should make a movie and then it's bad, and then he listens to everything that's bad. And then he's like, okay, hang on. And then he fixes it all before the DVD.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
funny.
The most recent Alien movie did that. So the CGI for the robot obviously didn't look great on screen. Apparently, they just redid all the CGI for the DVD release, or the Blu-ray release.
That's really funny.
Mm.
I would do that. Like, as long as you've made your money back and, like, you know, you're in the green... Spend a little bit of that money, because that's the version that a lot of people will remember anyway. You know, the home video version is the one that a lot of people will probably see and remember. And there you go. That's what's on streaming. That's what's on home video. I'd try it. Listen, it's nowhere near as snaky as a lot of the other things that they do.
Exactly.
You know, so may as well try it.
But okay, Sonic the Hedgehog can release Sonic the Hedgehog and Sonic the Hedgehog and Sonic the Hedgehog.
I thought you were talking about the Sonic the Hedgehog redesign, and I was about to have a moment. We really... That moment proved that bullying works.
I want that cut, damn it.
That should have been a DVD feature, where they're like,
I want the old one. I want the Sonic next. Foot cut, or Riot.
On that note... I wish we'd already had the question, because that'd be a great way to end the episode. But
it's fine. Re-edit it.
Yeah, in the true spirit of the thing, I'll just edit that at the end after everything. Yeah. So the final question I always ask is the three question. First episode, I asked my guest who her three favorite actual play people to be on her podcast would be. We had a great time with it. And so I ask everybody their top three something, come up with it during the interview as we're chatting, as to what would be funniest, most interesting kind of play on the things we've been talking about. For you, what are your top three cards from card games? Top three individual cards.
Ooh. Okay. So top three card games from card games are
individual cards. So yeah, not like Yu-Gi-Oh, but
yeah, no, sure. I really I can't even remember what it's called. So there's a magic card.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Expanding Mass or Expanding Loam or something like that.
Oh, I'm.
Every time it deals damage to something or takes damage, the thing that dealt damage to it or it dealt damage to becomes a copy of it. So it slowly just turns the entire field into Expanding Mass and nothing has any effect.
That's hilarious.
I think the only way to get rid of it is just first strike, get it off the board, or just that's targeted removal.
That's hilarious.
Card number two is... looks around room.
What's a card I like?
I very much like the card in the Binding of Isaac card game that forces you to play Among Us whilst playing the Binding of Isaac card game.
That's incredible.
So this is a real card. It causes everyone to be assigned secret roles, and one person is the imposter and can attack other players, and then everyone can vote off the imposter.
That's amazing. I love that.
And my final card is...
obviously, the Blue Eyes White Dragon.
No, Marshmallon. Who is a Yu-Gi-Oh
card. Is that a Yu-Gi-Oh card?
Yeah, it is a Yu-Gi-Oh card that is a small, round ball of pink putty with a face. And it can't die.
Look at this guy.
It just can't die. It's my favorite card. It can't die. It was my favorite card when I used to play. You just put it face down. Someone attacks it. It flips up. It does a bunch of shit when it flips up. And then it just can't die. And it just sits there.
That's amazing. Oh, and you take 1,000 damage. Wow. That rules. Yeah, that's a great card.
And bonus fourth card is the 1991 NBA Hoops Mark Jackson Knicks card number 205.
Perfect. The correct answer. The correct answer. Fourth card because you weren't paying attention.
Yes.
The Menendez card. That's great. Yeah. Perfect. I've told everybody. They're like, oh, I don't know if I answered what, you know, if I gave you what you were asking, or I feel like I had too many. And I was like, no, this is the best way to answer. I asked you for 3-something. If you gave me 4 slightly not what I asked for, perfect. That's the point of the question.
No. My last two answers are one and the same because they're basically the same card. Marshmallow depicts the Menendez brothers, and the NBA card flips up and deals 1,000 damage to you.
It's weird that they wrote that on the back of the basketball card. Like, it's printed in the text that says this card does 1,000 damage.
Yeah, right. And all the other cards just say the name of the basketball player. But yeah, this one is like, you take 1,000 damage.
You know, talks about like their rookie year and their stats. And this card says you take 1,000 damage. And that's, I don't know, weird.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Rat, thank you so much for being on the show. It was fantastic to talk about Rusty Revolvers and Fukusatsu and... the 1993 NBA card.
1991 NBA Hoops Mark Jackson 205 Knicks card.
I'm gonna have to remember. It's gonna be one of those weird things that you commit to memory that it's like, why do I 3 years from now I'm gonna be like, why do I remember this card? Why do I think about Mark Jackson all the time?
Wow, that's weird. It's like, and it's costs loads of money on eBay as well. Why is that one card expensive?
I'm gonna drive the market up in that single handedly. But goodness, yeah. Thank you again so much for being on. Rusty Revolvers on BackerKit. By the time you're hearing this, most likely, the links to that will be in the description. The links, you know, everything we talked about, all of Neon Rot's website, you know, whatever you need is in the show notes as always.
We're talking to you from the past. Sorry, go on.
That's a weird thing. I don't remember when I realized that, but like when I realized that, like, you could record a thing and then put it out closer to the temporal date. That was an interesting day when I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Just time traveling almost.
Yeah. Just a thing I hadn't considered. That's going to be it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Go ahead and say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
done. Another episode completed. I never know what to say at the end. I never know how to like close out. So whatever feels like I don't know what to do, and maybe I have a face like I don't know what to do with my hands, that's exactly what it is. I want to thank Neon Rot again so much for reaching out and being on the show and coming in, making time to talk to me about Rusty Revolvers. I'm very excited to check it out and back it and play it and Fukusatsu. Like I said, all the links to Rusty Revolvers, Fukusatsu, Neon Rot's website, all the other games will be in the show notes. So go check those out, as well as everywhere you can find the show and me on various socials like Blue Sky or the YouTube page. Now, there won't be a video episode for this interview because I forgot to record this one. I didn't for the last one that I did. And so what that means is I need to not count that I'm going to remember to do it, but to make the post-it that I keep telling myself that I'm going to make to put on my PC case right here. I have a good number of interviews scheduled and lined up, and I'm excited to get out to you. I'm excited to hear you hear these amazing people, and I have people that I'm talking to right now, and this, I say it every time, but doing this podcast has been amazing. I'm feeling very tired right now. It's been a very busy week in terms of my life and also the show and everything else, and also literally everything happening in the world. But goodness, we try to find pockets of happiness and care and stillness where we can. And I hope that this podcast can be that for you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to everybody who's reviewed it. Thank you to everybody who comes and supports the Patreon or subscribes to the playlist on YouTube, anything like that. If you engage with the content in any way, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. If you tell me how much you enjoy it on social media, know that that just means the absolute world to me. With having this done, I'm going to go play some Monster Hunter. I'll see you in the next one.